Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm super excited today. I have a lot of introductions to make to start out. So my co-host, Burl Love, is off doing something very Cincinnati at the moment. He's at spring training. And so we had pre-booked some very special guests today. Buddy and Mike LaRosa, celebrating the 70th anniversary of LaRosa's. And so what better time to talk to them? They're two-time repeat guests. But who should co-host with me then? I love all of my coworkers. Alex Coolidge kindly offered, to which I said, I have someone else in mind. So today, and I love him, and I'll talk about it when I get home tonight. My co-host is Keith Pandolfi, the Inquirer's food writer. There's no better person to help ask the questions today. In fact, I'll probably mostly be quiet. Welcome, Keith.
Thanks for having me. And sorry, Alex, I didn't know about that. I didn't know you wanted to do it.
It's, you know.
I'm glad to be here.
Sometimes there's all those married with microphones and everything. Yes, but yes. And I think we could probably have some fun conversations, but those are for different days. Yes. When you have Buddy LaRosa on,
yeah,
who you I've always talk wanted, food.
Mm-hmm, and I've always wanted to meet Buddy. This is actually the first time I'm going to get to meet him, even though I've written so much about him over the years. So very excited to talk to him and learn some about the history of not just LaRosa's, but pizza in Cincinnati.
And I think the secret to his success. Yes. That's when it comes to anniversaries, those are kind of good questions to ask.
Exactly.
But we do always kind of start out talking about news of the week. I'm not going to bore Keith with politics this week. We definitely talked that last week. So when I was kind of thinking about the topics, we're going to bridge the topics today. We're going to talk a little bit about development, but it really crosses into Keith's specialty of our food writing. And I wanted to talk about Court Street because I've had the opportunity, as it's getting nicer outside, to really be up in that Court Street district and how amazing it has come along. I reached out to 3CDC just to kind of get some of the numbers.
Yeah.
Because they kind of quietly started redeveloping Court Street, and then it came very much a thing that they were going to take on that area, and it's not been that long. I mean, $123.8 million just really in that Vine Street area. That stretches from Vine to Walnut. You have the Kroger on the Rhine, right? So we all shop there if we're ever downtown. The condo projects along Court Street and the $5 million Court Street Plaza renovation that was done in 2021, sparking all of these restaurants to come. Yeah.
It's really amazing. If you haven't been to Court Street lately, get down there because what's happening is – it's shocking, really. I was down there. I don't know. When did we go to Scotty's? We went to Scotty's for lunch.
Like three weeks ago. I've already been back. So.
And the weather was not good that day, but Court Street was really hopping. There's an energy there that is just I have not seen a city block like this in Cincinnati for a long time. A lot of new restaurants opened up very quickly in the past month. One of them would be Pataroja Taqueria, which is fantastic. It is so good. They're doing Mexican street food. Their birria tacos are wonderful. The torta is fantastic. It's got such a lively atmosphere in there, really good energy. Already a big fan of that. That's right next door to Onalicious, a Hawaiian restaurant that's been there for, I'm going to say, not a year, but close to. Really great masubi sandwiches, which are spam and rice. Do not trash spam. It is good stuff. Great sandwiches. I think it's a chicken wild or long rice soup that they do that's fantastic. It's still a little
I didn't
cool.
see us veering in to eat the spam sandwich,
oh,
but
I'm sorry.
Here we
I'm
are.
Sorry. Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah. Let me stick to the subject here, but yes.
No, but I wanted to talk about the restaurants up there because there's so many destination restaurants now.
And Mid-City, if anybody's, you know, if you've read my stuff, you know how much I love Mid-City. It's one of my favorite restaurants in town. They opened up a few years ago, and the owner, Mike Stankovich, was telling me that there are going to be a lot of new restaurants opening up, you know, in the next couple of years. It seemed like it was really slow going for a while. When this whole, I think you can expand on this, but this whole thing started before COVID. I think the plans started then. So while there was a lot of initiative then, COVID hit, that initiative went away. And now we're finally seeing kind of the fruits of this development really.
And there's more people downtown, and they're hosting hosting things up there. There was the roller skate.
Oh, yeah.
The roller rink, the pop-up roller rink for a little bit.
Yeah. And there's been some markets and things like that going on. But what you're seeing now is that you're seeing Hideki, who owns Kiki in College Hill, just opened up a little Japanese grocery store that's got some to-go items that are fantastic and get sushi and other items. And he will, I'm sure, whoever's working there will be happy to educate you on Japanese snack food.
Wait, is this the pop-up Japanese restaurant I've heard of?
Oh, no, this is
There's permanent. Something, though. There's a pop-up sushi restaurant, right?
Well,
we like to talk about that.
Maybe there is. Maybe there isn't. I don't know.
I saw it on social media.
I don't know.
I forget the name of it.
I don't know if I can talk about that. I don't know, but there might
be. You guys, we'll talk about it after we go.
There might be a little surprise.
Oh, look at me ruining the surprises.
Yeah.
Gosh, sorry.
Can we edit that out? Yeah. No. You also, it's called Daruma, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, the Japanese grocery.
Okay.
And then Pilar, which named after, what was it, Ernest Hemingway's boat?
Yes.
Was it his boat? Yes. Kind of a great place. I really hadn't gone there until recently. It's a nice, a great bar. No food there, but there's plenty of food options around there. And there's a vegan restaurant that's going to be opening soon.
That's true. We talked to Rico Grant, you guys, a couple weeks ago, and he is an investor. His Palooza Noir fund was helped fund that. And I think he called it like the vegan lounge. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We definitely need more.
Yeah.
I'm not vegan, as we'll talk about in a little bit. Like, I'm an Italian girl.
I should be more vegan.
We need some more vegan choices. So that's going to be a really exciting addition.
Yeah. And have you been to Court Street Kitchen yet?
I have not.
Okay. That's on my list.
Although you did tell me something about the Court Street Kitchen that I have repeated to several people that I now have sent there, which is that it is an amazing restaurant. And don't be like, well, what's Court Street Kitchen? And don't think, oh, the name, but think of what amazing restaurant it is.
Oh,
so I have sent a lot of people there.
Yeah, it's a lot fancier than the name would suggest. I thought it was going to be sort of cafeteria style or something like
that. No, it does sound like that.
But it is a sit-down restaurant, white tablecloth.
They've come out and been very happy about having gone.
And I'll be going there soon, and I'm sure I'll be writing about that. So, and I, you know, there are a couple other restaurants that are on the horizon that I am not allowed to talk about yet, but they're really, really exciting.
See, that's like the best kind. Just like little hints, you guys.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm just super excited because it really shows what 3CDC can do. You know, we're talking a lot right now about the Convention Center District and how they're overseeing it. Mm-hmm. But 3CDC really can just come in with that big perspective.
Yeah.
And they really, I mean, I covered courts, you know, 20 years ago now, and there were some good restaurants up by the courthouse, but they went away, and then it was like kind of piecemeal, and they had a vision for that area. The county buildings up there, the courthouse, places that draw, you know, a lot of business people all day, every day, and they had a vision, and they executed it, and just I really am encouraging people to, as the weather gets nicer, walk around up there and see what they've done. It's pretty exciting.
Yep.
All right. You know what else is exciting?
We're
just going to story tell today.
Because
we're going to have Buddy on and we're going to do some storytelling.
Yeah.
So let's welcome Buddy and Mike to the podcast. Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. And there's nothing more Cincinnati than our two guests today. I'm very excited. We are here with Buddy LaRosa and Mike LaRosa. They are celebrating their 70th anniversary on March 24th. And you know what we're going to do today? Tell stories. We're going to tell some stories. And the podcast is the best way to do that. Welcome.
Thank you, Sherry. It's great to be here. Hello, Keith. Thank you, Sharon. Yeah. Great to be here.
We already told some stories without you guys, so we're going to dive right in and start.
Okay. I'm today's special guest host, Keith Pandolfi. I'm the food writer here at the Enquirer. And big fan, a buddy, and everything he's done here. So, do you have a question to start, or can I get
you,
can
you
I
just,
dig right
you
in?
You start.
I just want to go back a little bit to the beginning because I've written so much about you, and I may some of it may be right and some of it may be wrong. So I want you to clarify a few things for me. Let's just start with what it was like growing up in South Fairmount when there was still a Little Italy in Cincinnati. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, back in the 30s, yep. The city was kind of polarized. You know, you had Indian Hill, you know, the money people. Then you had the riverfront here. It was called the Bottoms. Well, they usually were people from lower income down here at the Bottoms, and they were Mediterranean. You had a mixture of typical Lebanese, people from Middle East, and then the Italians were mixed in too, especially the Sicilians. They were always included with the that group. And it used to come every spring. The river came up many times. The room I slept in with one of my uncles was on the second floor. And whenever the river would come up overnight, a couple times I had to get out and get in a rowboat to go up to 4th Street, you know, because the river came up. But that was fun, you know. Yeah.
So yeah. I definitely have seen pictures of old Cincinnati like that.
And yeah.
The river came up so high, that suspension bridge over there, it came to like 3 feet from the top. That was, and I think in the, oh gosh. 30? Yeah, 37.
37.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
It floods now, but not like that.
And, you know, one thing I wrote about last year was kind of the birth of La Rosa's Pizza at San Antonio Catholic Church. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
What I wrote is that your Aunt Dina.
Aunt Dini.
Sorry.
They didn't say Dina. Their pronunciation wasn't, proper.
Okay. And she is the one who came up with the sauce that we all know today.
She was the best cook in the family.
Okay.
That's the reason.
Okay.
When I was stumbling around with recipes, Uncle Bill, that was my mother's brother, hey, he said, don't fool around with those. Go see Aunt Dini. Okay. She's got the best recipes. She's the best cook in the family. Matter of fact, she was in charge of all the cooking at the church.
Okay. What else did she make that was a big hit at the
Everything.
Church? Everything.
Everything. After you ate her food, you licked your fingers. She just had that skill. And she never measured anything.
Okay.
You know, she'd taste and then throw a little more of this and a little more of that.
And when did you start helping her out and working with her?
Well, being the youngest, you helped out everybody. Mm-hmm. You know. And then she really was kind of a babysitter of mine. Because at a rather early age, my dad being Sicilian born was bad enough, but then a truck driver and then a boxer and then be married to a Napoletan Italian girl that the family didn't want her to marry him anyway. He had two strikes against him going in. So the first time he got arrested for fighting in the street, but they hit him first or they picked a fight with him. But when you're a boxer, these are weapons, and, you know, they treated him differently. Okay. So they got separated and then eventually divorced him. He's no good. He was a hardworking
you're
guy.
You're the
he
youngest
was a good
of
guy.
How many?
I was the only one.
Oh, you're the only one. Okay,
the only,
you said
they were
the youngest,
only
the youngest of all the cousins.
Well, yes, at that time.
And when your Aunt Dini was making the sauce, pizza was just sort of not that well-known
in
Cincinnati
here.
At all.
No.
You had Lombardi's up in New York, but you
yeah,
there
nothing,
really were no
nothing like that in my generation growing up before I got to be a teenager. Once I became a teenager, and then when I was too young for World War II, but when the Korean conflict started, we're always been patriotic. I want to go and I want to enlist and I want to join the Navy because the Navy, you see the world, you know. So when I did do that, joined the Navy, And I was stationed in Chicago, then I was stationed in New York, then I was stationed in Brooklyn. They made a medic out of me. And gosh, they sell pizza. They had pizza shops, you know? And that's the first time I saw a restaurant or a building that catered just to pizza. Once in a while, you might have it on the menu if you went into a classy Italian restaurant and they might feature it one afternoon for lunch or something, but not like we know it now today. But Cincinnati was, I guess, after the return of the GIs from World War II, then they started introducing the pizza in New York and in Chicago. And I know it's not pertaining to that, but you know what they're doing now to these pizzerias in New York?
No.
They're changing their ovens. They no longer can use wood-fired and coal-fired because of the pollution.
Oh, the codes,
yeah. Everything in New York is overregulated.
Carbon emissions. Isn't that terrible?
There's a lot of overregulation.
Yes. So I think it was until 1949 that a pizzeria came to Cincinnati, opened in Cincinnati, and that was Capri. Is that correct?
Who?
A pizzeria Capri, is that Capri Pizza? No? Okay.
Actually, Aceto, the Aceto family opened one on Vine Street. But whenever they did anything years ago, and very small, no big splash, they have a little pizza oven, you could say a counter type, mm-hmm. where you put one piece at a time, okay. and they sold it by the slice. And they put it in the town where you couldn't buy a whole pie, just slices, and then he didn't last too long. Well, no one else really had the initiative or the foresight to go 100% in a big pizzeria until the Palazzola family did.
Okay.
And they did, called the place Capri.
Okay.
But I saw the ad on television. Okay. And then knowing the family, I talked to one of the drivers that they were, oh gosh, in wholesale groceries. Mm-hmm. They owned movie theaters. I mean, it was a big, big family. And they were very diversified in business. Found out it wasn't open yet. They were still putting their plans together. Well, that's when I got off my high horse and I said, I'm going to go see what the hell they're doing. And I'm going to open up in one. Okay. So I opened up and I got opened up ahead of them, but I didn't make a big splash like they did.
So it was called Papagino's back then, right?
When I opened up.
When you opened it up.
But they opened up first.
Okay.
I will give them that credit.
So
Capri
they opened,
Pizza opened first.
Just was in within months or a year or what do you think?
I'd say I opened up maybe a couple months after them.
Okay.
They were the first, but they didn't have staying power.
Okay.
They didn't last long, you know. I think we're 70 years now.
70.
Yeah.
70 years. And Pasquale's opened up around the same time.
No.
Oh, my gosh. I'm getting this all wrong.
Well, here's a story. Here's a story.
Let's get the record straight.
All right. Pasquale was founded by Pat Grimaldia.
Okay.
He was a cousin of my wife. We're all related. You got to be careful who you're talking about. Hey, that's my cousin, you know. So anyway, he was a restaurateur. But his specialty was going to a factory that didn't want to put a food operation in for their employees. Pat would go there and say, hey, let me put in my food. You supply the equipment. I'll come in with the labor and the food, and I'll put in the time, and I'll have a light breakfast. I'll have lunch and a light supper. How many days you want? 5, 6, 7? To your hours of your plant. And that's what Pat would do. So Pat had a food service in the Loth, L-O-T-H, Loth Manufacturing Company. They made medicine cabinets and aluminum trash cans. Before that, the trash cans were made out of a composition of steel. They must have weighed 30 pounds empty. You fill them up and you have to throw them up on a truck. Well, today everything's automated, it's different. But that's what he did. So he was in there. The guys in the neighborhood that were teenagers or younger, like me, would go over. Hey, Pat, you need anybody? Need any help today in the summertime? We're not in school. Yeah, you can do this and do that. Gave us little jobs. Give you a buck or two and something to eat. And go on. So when I got out of the Navy, I went over to CPAT. I was proud of, you know, serving, because when I was a kid, I remember when Pat served, okay, and they hit all the tattoos and everything. You don't see any on me.
No tattoos.
No tattoos?
No.
None?
My heart's tattooed, but nothing else. Well, once I was a corpsman, and I saw guys that had arms amputated because they had blood infections from these guys who, give me the same needle. I want to do it over here. You got the same needle. So
you
anyway.
Know, my dad is a Navy corpsman. He was in Vietnam. And he doesn't have any tattoos.
No. He does, does he?
He does not.
But none of us did. None of the corpsmen did. Yeah. So anyway, when I went to see Pat, he said, what are you going to do? Are you going to go to work for your old man? Even though they had divorced, they shared custody, you know. I had spent time with the LaRosas, Sicilians, and I had spent time with the Napolitans, the Panaros. Hey, you're getting just like them damn Sicilians. You're doing, wait a minute now, you know. Because I spend a week with them or two, I come back, I'm the same guy. Yeah, you're not this, you're not, you keep away from them. What are you going to, rivalry, competition, jealousy, all that. After a while, I picked that up and I just went along with it. Okay. I'm going to take the good, forget about the bad. And when I went to see Pat, hey, I'm home now, you know, I was gone for 6 years. And I really appreciate you, Pat, all the information you gave me about the Navy. And, well, they were sincere. When we played baseball, the single guys would play the married guys at the local ballpark. The married men against the single men. And usually the single guys always won. And then they would buy a half a barrel of beer or something on a tap. Mm-hmm. And somebody would bring some food or something. And that was a Sunday afternoon, maybe. So Pat said to me, what are you going to do, buddy? Go to work for your dad or your uncles on both sides of the La Rosa and the Panaro. That was my mother's maiden name. There were small entrepreneurs in fruits and vegetables. We had stands in Finley Market. There was a market over on 6th Street. That's been all tore down. There was a 6th Street market. And then where market is now on Finley Street, Finley Market, they had these little booths, not booths, but street stands with a canvas top, you know, and they put them up 1, 2, 3. They put them up in 20 minutes, half an hour, take them down even faster, bring in their food and sell it, and they're gone. And I did that for a while. I said, I don't know what I'm going to do, Pat, but I got an idea opening up a pizza parlor. Pizza parlor? So Pat picked my brain. I don't think it was 3 months or so. His brother was a baker over on Main Street, I believe, and the bakery was called Vine Street Bakery, and a guy named, what was his name, Smith?
Jones?
No. Jones, yeah. Jones was his brother-in-law.
Sether Jones, yeah.
Jones was a brother-in-law. Pat's brother worked for Jones, Vinny. So he said, Vinny, Buddy LaRose is going to open up a pizza parlor. Can you make that pizza dough for over here? Yeah, I can make pizza dough. Vinny was a great baker. So he made some pizza. And Pat, yeah, he's a cook. Puts a piece of sauce on it. His store's empty next door. Pasquale opened up first in Liberty and Vine.
Okay.
So Pat was really,
okay,
he was really the first.
Pat is Pasquale's, yes. Just
but then Capri opened up before everybody, but they just were over at Tennessee and Reading.
Okay. And how long did it take for pizza to catch on in Cincinnati?
Well, I opened up in 53. Pat opened up about the same time, a little bit earlier than me. And I'd say about maybe the 60s.
60s?
Yeah.
Okay.
By this time, Pizza Hut started to get in there.
Yep.
And then Angelo's. And you know how Pizza Hut got in there?
No.
I went to school with a kid named
Jack Nickert.
Jack Nickert.
Baker. Okay.
Went Italian.
Okay.
Smart kid.
Yeah.
And when you get into automobile sales or insurance or real estate, who do you call? Your friends and your family. Mm-hmm. I got a call from Jack Nickert one day. I'm already in business, you know? La Rosa's Pizza then. When I started, I had Papagino's because I had to take in 3 partners. Yeah. I didn't have no capital. So I took in a cousin, Muzzy Manella. They all had nicknames. Ed Serino and
Mike Soldano.
Took in those three guys. And two were married and two were single. I was married. So Mike and I paired up. And Muzzy and Head paired up because they were single. So they worked shifts. They didn't. The married guys had to work weekends. Single guys got the weekends off.
Yeah.
That was going in.
How you need a wife.
So anyway, that's how we did it. And we did it for a while. But you get four hard-headed Italians. They got to have things their way. You're always getting in fights and arguments. And yeah. I mean, it wasn't a pleasant venture. But getting back to the story, Pat Grimaglia had Pasquale's. This Jack Nickert calls me up. Mr. Rosa, I'm selling investments. I said, well, what kind of investment? What kind of investment was it?
Insurance?
No.
No.
It was a type of, like an annuity. But I don't have no money. I mean, I can buy something on a monthly basis. Oh, how much can you invest a month? He got me for maybe $110, $120 a month. I felt I could pay that. I said, but you might have to come up here and collect from me. If you send me a statement, you may not get paid. Because I put them all in a hat and I picked somebody out. So anyway, when he would come, hi, Jack. Just sit down and wait for me. I know I owe you, but by the time so he'd say, oh, I'm in no hurry, buddy. Take your time. He'd sit there for an hour or two. He's clocking me.
Yeah.
Okay. He did that for about 2 years or so. Next thing you know, he don't come anymore. A different guy's coming. Where's Jack Nickert? Oh, he's got Pizza Hut, buddy. He opened up Pizza Hut. Didn't have the class to at least say to me, hey, buddy, I'm going to be in the pizza business
like
now.
Like a franchise of Pizza Hut?
Yeah.
The franchise. Okay.
And he did very well. He opened up about 20 or 30
pizza
of them.
Was a thing.
Sold them all out to Pepsi Cola, didn't he? Yeah. And a couple of times he was really, he gets the shakes when he get around me. He turned around and walked away. I said, hey, don't run away from me. I said, when you sold me an annuity, I was seeing you every time I turned around. Then when you go into pizza business, all of a sudden, you don't know me anymore. I want to be close to my competitors. I want to be a friendly competitor, Jack. You want to act like you're doing.
I personally think that you have out-pizzaed the Hut here in town. I think we would all agree.
Well, everywhere, really.
Yes, yes.
Thank you. But anyway, that's how they got started. And I always want to be a friendly competitor. If somebody opens up in my neighborhood, I go in there. I'll introduce myself. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you need anything other than my sauce or my dough, I'll be happy to help you out. You might need lettuce. You might need tomatoes. You might run out of coins, change. I want to be a friendly competitor. Now, but I want to keep them close to me. I want to know what the heck they're doing.
Okay. Now, one other. Sherry, I want
you're
you to
good.
Dig in.
No,
you
know, you're good.
Play. I just have so many questions.
Don't invite the food writer to be your guest host, and then you ask the questions as the City Hall reporter. That's not a thing.
Thank you. Indulge me just for a second, then you can ask some questions here.
And you never got the other pizzeria.
What?
The other pizzeria that opened up was Angelo's.
Oh, yes, okay. Angelo's.
That was Jones' son who worked for Pasquale, whose father owned the bakery.
I think there should be an HBO show about the Italians of Cincinnati in the 1950s and the whole pizza business.
Who tells me about all the Italians? We have a mutual friend, the Worleys, Jeff and Julie Worley.
Cousin of mine.
Yeah, and I know the kids go to church with you.
I christened her.
You did.
Really?
Yeah, her mother's up at Bailey Place now. Hi, Josephine.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yep.
Yes. And so we've mutual friends, but I get all of the old Italian stories from them because I'm from Youngstown and I have all my own Italian stories, but it's fun to hear ones from here.
Yes. And going back to one more question about the food, you got out of the Navy, you were in Philadelphia. Is that correct?
On Broad Street, South Broad Street.
Mm-hmm. And this is where you discovered the hoagie.
Well, hoagie sandwiches are big in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
When the guys are all going to go down to the pizza shop, I go with them, and I see them selling hoagie sandwiches, you know.
So, go ahead, sorry.
So, when I made my menu up, you don't want to make it too big, you know, so you just put a hoagie sandwich on, just one. They sold for 60 cents then.
Nice.
And we couldn't make the steak like they make it up there. It's too was too far advanced for Cincinnati taste. We've already tried it, didn't we, Mike? And just nobody really was interested. That was,
What was the steak like there compared to what you were serving?
Well, it's like a cheesesteak, you know.
Oh, it was a Philly cheesesteak. Yeah. I understand. Okay.
I mean, sliced. Today maybe it would be different, but now we try not to put new items on the menu. You know, your menu is big enough now, you know.
Okay. Because I've always credited you with bringing the hoagie to Cincinnati.
Don't take the rondos off.
When Pasquale put them on his menu, he calls them hoagie. H-O-G-G-I-E.
Oh, okay.
Get that? A hoagie, you know what a hog is.
Yes. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
I didn't know that at all.
He calls them hoagies.
See, we're learning things. It's the best thing about the podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. But I'm going to credit you with bringing them to Cincinnati, and I feel like that you're the reason we have this hoagie obsession.
Thank you.
And the Baked Buddy, one of my favorite sandwiches.
Thank you.
So, yes. Sherry, would you like to chime in here?
No, this is, I mean, this is just true because I've had this conversation with Keith. We sit by each other at work, and so we had the big hoagie conversation.
Yeah.
And so this is true. He's not just saying these things.
But then here's another thing. Whenever we would come out with a new one, we had a spy. His name, what was his name? He worked, he was a wholesaler. He used to come and get our order every week. And then he was selling Pat too. And then I was using a lot of tuna fish. And then he asked me, he said, buddy, he said, you know, I've been selling you all this tuna. So what do you do with it?
I'm going to ask the same question.
We make tuna fish hoagies. And we use a special blend of tuna. It was fantastic. Well, the next thing you know, Pasquale's, they have a tuna bella sandwich. Then we'd have a meatball sandwich. Then they'd have it. So he was bringing, but I don't care. That's competition. That's better. The more they sell, then we'll sell more.
But
you
the
know.
Tuna fish on the Fridays, right?
I never
tuna
really
yeah.
was an enemy. I always wanted to be a friendly competitor.
Yeah.
We can do better together. We don't want to be at each other's throats. Mm-hmm. I'd go out of my ways. I learned that from boxing. Unless you were a left-hander, nobody, and you're a right-hander, I hate to fight left-handers, but I'd still make a friend with you. Say, hey, good luck. Take it easy on me next time.
Okay, so it's not as violent and terrible as you make it sound. Everybody's pretty friendly with each other.
No.
Okay, no fist fights breaking out in the back alleys between the pizza guys.
But we do see who's lasted. We see who's lasted.
We see who's lasted, yes. And 70 years, which is just crazy. And still such loyalty to La Rosa's. And the question I have for you, Mike, is you've had to kind of innovate a little bit over the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years. I know you brought on we were just talking about the cauliflower pizza when you came in and how much I love that. What's the reception been like to those little tweaks, those little innovations you've made to kind of keep up with the times?
Well, you know, innovation is important to any business. And, you know, the recent things you're asking about cauliflower bites and crust, you know, those are just singles, you know, they're not double, triples, or home runs. But, you know, over time, probably the best thing we ever did was the one number for pizza, where we, you know, used a central order station to process all the orders. You know, that was a brilliant move. It's one of the best things we ever did. It really drove our store growth and everything because we answered the telephone better than people were competing with. Yeah. And if they had questions or comments, we were there to answer their questions. And if they had a complaint, we could make sure they were happy based on whatever happened. So the in 1990, when we did the central order system, major innovation that dramatically changed how we came across to guests. Probably, you know, right behind that would be delivery in terms of when Domino's was opening up in the early 80s, and they were only selling pizza and soft drinks. They really didn't have anything else on the menu because they were 30 minutes or free, you know, they needed to get it out the door.
Yeah.
Well, we strategized to do delivery better by doing the entire menu. So the variety that we had on our menu, we promised the guests that we would deliver everything anytime at work, at their business, wherever they may be. And that helped us outperform all the delivery players back then. But I think Dad's influence on all of us as we were taking responsibility in the business was that we want to work harder, care more, do things better, outcompete the competitors. And the 70-year journey here is because his good, better, best mindset is really in our company DNA. We're always striving to learn from our mistakes or someone else's mistakes and get better because of it.
I make the mistakes. Now, let me tell you now. How did you go into the call center? I bought this big building to go into the olive oil business.
Okay,
I bought this big building. It was only two blocks away, and it was a furniture factory, and they went out of business.
We're talking two blocks away from the Boudinot store, right?
Yeah. Okay. There's a big flag flying there, La Rosa's. That's our call center and our corporate offices. Okay. Well, the building's sitting there empty. I got an idea. See, I'm a great idea guy, and I go running over here. Then when I make the mistakes, they pick up on it when the olive oil business goes in the tank.
Uh-huh.
And never materialize. And I guess I'm going to have to sell that building. Now, mistake. I think, Dad, we're going to do something with that building. Then he puts his, there's no one head. It's a combination with a team.
Yep.
I get the idea. Maybe I fumble it and they pick it up. Well, let's do this with it. So they pick that. The good thing is I own the building and I'm the landlord.
That is the good. And they pay you the rent.
That's right.
And I don't have to lean on their business for handouts. No, but really, that's, he said it. We make a mistake. I'm the guy. They're not going to say second guess me. I did this. I did that. Well, everything I do isn't going to work out. Where they do things, they sit at a table and they all discuss things and they come up with one idea and they develop it. I get an idea, I run with it. See, and that's a mistake. You can't do that. But every time I've done that, they've always picked up on it. And a fumble, they made a touchdown out of it. Huh. And it makes me look good.
I do feel like even today that the number is so important because you're in the, everything is moving to apps. This is when I sound old. Everything's moving to apps. I know, order on the app and they... But if you're driving home from somewhere and you realize you're not going to cook dinner, you know the number in your head and you just call it. You say, hey, Siri, dial the number, and you can call and do it because you cannot order on an app while you're driving home from whatever you realize you're going to have food and you're going to pick it up on the way home.
Absolutely.
And so even today, it's still like that. We use it very much that way, the old school way.
And it always will be that way because, you know, sometimes it's just easier to place the call than to stop and, you know, safely order on your app or whatever. So there always will be demand. But we call it our guest service center now where we answer the phone orders because most of what they do is we watch social media. And if somebody post something that they weren't happy about an order or their service, we immediately reach out to those folks and we apologize and we try to make things right. So our guest service center now is really our service standard where we do our best to make smiles from all of our guests. And some guests email us with issues. Others go to social and, you know, they post something. But we have a team of people there every day from 9 in the morning until midnight that are just studying social. And I think we do that better than most of our competitors because I don't know about you, but anytime I've ever complained about something to another business, you're lucky they get back to you at all.
Keith and I are familiar about complaints on social media, but we're just on the other end of it.
Yeah.
The funny thing about the people that work for us, they love what they do. When they come to work at the phone center, they come in with shopping bags, like they're going to stay for a week. And they got their little cubicle. They put their little member or their family pictures and little toys. And their feel and their environment. They love it.
Yeah.
And you know, when you got people that love what they do, they'll never leave you. If you went through my corporate headquarters, how long have you been here? 35, 45, 50, they never want to retire. And what better partners do you have when people love their job?
It's important.
They go above and beyond. And I went, what did I do yesterday? I spent time down there, just like you're sitting here small talking. I said, how long have you been here now, Sherry? 35 years. Oh, my gosh. I remember when you were dating so-and-so. He worked for us. What's he doing now? Oh, he's retired. He winds up being a police officer. Was it, what's her name?
Bridget. And Mark. Yeah.
And then her mother and father met working at La Rosa's.
Wow.
That's the kind of culture we got. P&G, I learned that from P&G. Anybody in our neighborhood worked at P&G. It's like church. And it's we're not close to P&G, believe me. But generally, when you have different benefits for your staff, for your associates, they really like that, you know, and take the time to sit with them, have lunch with them, and recognize them as an important cog in the wheel. If it wasn't for you and you, we wouldn't be here.
Family.
Thank you for what you do. I picked up somebody that was coming out of the phone center yesterday, and I never saw him before, but he had his backpack and he had his shopping bag, so I know he worked in there.
Yeah.
I said, hey, you know who I am? He said, yeah, you're Mr. LaRosa. He said, but I never met you. I said, well, come on, hop in. You're going up to the bus stop? I'll give you a ride up to the bus stop.
Wow.
I rode him up. It was raining anyway. Come on. Yeah. And I'm running, how long you been here at LaRosa's? Oh, 20 years. I said, well, you know, I see you going in and out. It's like going to school. He said, it's better in school. I get paid here. You see, when you got happy people, it reflects in their job, and they're proud of their job.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, on the team member side, some of our stores have third-generation leadership, ownership. Some of our franchise owners, Grandpa was the initial franchisee. Mm-hmm. The son ran it. And now the grandson is running it. And that's, you don't see that very often.
No, you don't.
And on the guest side, I know some of our guests, they're fifth generation customers. Because, you know, they're as grandparents, they started patronizing La Rosa's. And now their great-grandchildren are coming in. So to celebrate 70 years, you know, the gratitude that I feel on both sides of the aisle, because our team members have been such a blessing to us. And our guest, all these years, these wonderful people, it's just been a journey of love. And I think my father never envisioned this happening, but he was so good at so many things, especially surrounding himself with talent. I mean, he was always a good judge of talent. So if there was an area of weakness for himself, he brought somebody in that would bring that strength.
Mm-hmm.
So he's an expert judge of talent. He's team-oriented. He's a team player. He's a great coach. And all of us have learned so much from him. And we're so proud that he's still here, that we can celebrate 70 together.
You're here.
You know, we always look for leaders, too. Because everybody's not a leader.
Everybody is not a leader.
Some are a great follower. But you got to find those leaders. And breeding dogs, we used to breed dogs, German Shepherds. And you get a litter of pups, there's going to be the alpha male or female, whoever's going to be the strong leader in that crowd. You'll see him. We'll put him in the center of the floor and put some building blocks around them. And that leader, he's tired of this environment. He wants to bust out and see what's on the outside. Well, when you find that leader, whatever method you do to find the leader, then you work with the leader. And that's what we do.
Do you still have a dog?
No
dogs now.
Where I live, you're not allowed to have dogs.
No.
I'm lucky they let me live in the building. But really, finding the leaders and developing them with your philosophy. And we use a lot of mundane proverbs, good, better, best. Once a test has begun, be the labor great or small. Do it well or not at all. That kind of stuff. It sounds corny, but when you believe it and you live it, and you practice it. If I see somebody on the street, I was going into Mari's Tiny Cove to see Matt and have lunch with him or supper with him last night.
We love Mari's.
That's another landmark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, Mari, when he was alive, We lived near there. On the way home, I'd stop and say hi to Marty. Buddy, you want to get a liquor license? Marty, I don't know nothing about liquor. I'll show you everything you want to know. Took the time, helped me get a liquor license. I wouldn't have a liquor license today. When I started, I didn't even drink. What do I want liquor for? People drink too much, you know. You got to have it, buddy. I got help from so many people. Buddy's a nice kid, 94 now. He's a nice kid. I want to help him. I want to do the same thing. I want to be like Mari was to me, to some of these other young guys. Give them encouragement. But you got to play your cards well. Just because you're in business, don't think that you're the boss. You don't have to be there. You open it and you close it. If you don't want to have that kind of philosophy, then don't go into business. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times your mate is not going to work with you on it. You think I want to put up with a husband that's not going to be there all the time. I said, look, as long as you're working and you're not in the bar or in the bowling alley, you know where you are. And we're all human. We all make mistakes. But a friend of ours that works for us, one of my assistants that you gave me, that she's never going to quit either. She lives an hour away from Cincinnati, but she's on a modified schedule. She only works a couple days a week. I said, how long does it take to get you here from where she lives down in Kentucky? Only an hour.
Huh. I mean, I feel like that she has a really good job. And it's a fun job.
So when you got people that are that qualified, I said, nah, I don't want to mention names now. What's your husband doing now? Oh, he wanted a barn. We never had a barn at this new place. So we're building a barn. We got the ground. I said, well, that's good. You'll know where he is all the time. He'll be back in the barn. Yep. A little wood shop or a little hobby, and it's whatever works. And so you can stay together, be together, and prosper together. And if I drink, I don't drink champagne. I don't drink. But if I drink champagne, so to speak, everybody's going to drink it. It's not I live here and you live down there. No. I like that one for all and all for one philosophy. And I sit with them. The captain usually doesn't associate with the crew. I want to associate with them. And I want to listen. And I want to watch. And I see some leaders in there that don't know they're leaders.
Yeah.
And then I want to pick them out. And then you win with them. We do the same thing in franchising. And some of these franchises, when they don't have to, who am I going to sell this to? None of my kids want it anymore. We put a buyout in there.
Okay.
The better they do and the more taxes they pay on their and their internal revenue slip, the more money we pay them. We reward them for paying a lot of tax.
Mm-hmm.
And they know one day when they sell to us, they're going to get a nice.
They get it back.
And they
families.
Do, don't they, Mike?
Yeah. But back to your question, Keith, we have to remain relevant. And that, it means the answer to being relevant is different to different demographics. So like our target audience, there's a gal named Sarah and Josh. And we target to Sarah and Josh because they are in their 30s. They have two or three children and they earn around $50,000 a year. So when we're communicating product and service messaging, we primarily talk to Sarah and Josh because they are in a time in their life where they're so busy with the demands on their time and their family activities that a pizza and the convenience that we can offer them via pickup or delivery or dine-in, it just lines up perfectly with them. So they're our target, but it doesn't mean we ignore both sides of that. With the baby boomers, the older people, I hear this every day. We love your just right combos. That's where you can get a half a hoagie and a smaller portion salad or a half a lasagna because their appetites aren't what they once were. So our boomers are loving what we offer because of the just right combos. Really young families, we have a kid's menu and pizza's on there and spaghetti and meatballs on there and we have chicken strips on there. So anything we can do on both sides of Sarah and Josh to remain relevant, we also are interested in doing. But the dynamics change. I mean, we're always doing research. We're talking to various demographic groups, listening to what's most important to them, and then executing to what we hear.
It was a great day. The cauliflower pizza. It was a cold, rainy day.
Yeah.
And it was not. We come into the office. It's fairly loose. We come in a lot because we like each other, which is important. And we have a boss that fosters that kind of. But we just happened to be here by ourselves with one other person. And it was the day the cauliflower pizza came.
Yes,
as a surprise. They just knocked on the door.
You sent some cauliflower pizza and the cauliflower bites over.
And it was a good day.
And it was great. Again, I told you I'm a fan of that. Now, Sarah and Josh, is this pizza for Sarah and Josh, or who are you targeting?
Not the cauliflower crust specifically. Okay. But we're always striving to communicate wherever Sarah and Josh are absorbing media.
Okay.
And, you know, today it may not be the local television stations. It could be something they're recording. It could be something they're streaming. It could be social media. So, you know, all of our communications goes across a wide spectrum.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That is where I get all of my information.
I still call legacy
newspapers and TikTok. Yeah. It runs the gamut.
Oh, I'm not even on TikTok. So yeah, you're ahead of me in that. Okay. What about Generation X, the lost generation? What do we want?
I'm sure we have a strategy, but I can't recite it to you. I'm sure we have.
The cauliflower pizza might be for us.
Maybe. I don't know.
Because we're always on diets.
I speak for yourself.
Okay.
I will never. I can never go on a diet.
He's the food writer.
Yes, yes.
So, okay. So 70 years. Had you been thinking about it? Did you think about 70 at 60 years, or do you just kind of take it as it comes? Do you
know
think
what?
About never, it in terms of an anniversary?
I never put a time frame on it. I think when you live to work rather than work to live, you anticipate the next day. The people you meet, the people that you're working with, always new people. And they're maybe only going to be there for a short time. So while they're there for a short time, I want them to know when they leave, the things they learn from us, they're going to continue to be successful, because that same philosophy is going to be, it never goes out of date when you're doing your best and you love what you're doing. When you cease to do that, or your people you work with, then you make new acquaintances and new challenges. And you're still climbing. You always want to keep climbing. I would want to go climb the Matterhorn if I had good shoulders, but my shoulders are wore out.
Me too. That's why. That's what's keeping me from doing it.
I've been rolling pizza doughs like this. And somebody said, oh, buddy, you have tennis elbow. No, maybe tennis shoulders, but I never played tennis in my life. But I rolled a million pizza balls.
Do you still make pizza ever? Or are you just
everything now is kind of automated.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, at one time, we made everything in the back of the store. Well, you take, if you got 50, 60 operations, you're not going to have consistency.
Yeah.
And you got to have, when you have a living product with yeast and salt, and, you know, it's going to always be moving.
Yep.
And you get busy, then you can't use the dough. But if you use it anyway, then the product's affected. So you have to have consistency where you make the dough. It's got to be environment. It's got to be, we have barometers in the room. How much moisture is in the air? Because we only use a certain amount. I'm not giving away the secrets, am I, Michael?
Very scientific. Though,
kick me. when the temperature is too high, well, then you don't use warm water. You use cooler water. It gets to the point when it's so hot, then maybe you use ice water. And so that you have that consistency all the time. You always want to try to be perfect. Well, you're never going to hit it. But when you always try...
Do you still go to that part of the business and see of that? Yeah.
Sure.
You do.
I go in there. I used to, of course, it's not sanitary, but I blow kisses at the dough.
Well, secret ingredient we've all been waiting to hear. Yeah. There it is.
What's love? That's the ingredient.
That is the ingredient.
We bless it with a cross. Whenever there's a big pile of dough now, I always tell, you know, the dough boys, put the cross on it. No atheists work for La Rosa. I'm sorry.
Okay.
No atheists.
I, No, it's a Catholic town, Keith.
It is a Catholic. I mean, I was raised Catholic, and
you have to be a Christian.
I bless my own pizzas. Yes.
Wow. But see, here's this is Mike adds a dimension that I never will be. He's the next generation. His son is a combination, a little bit of me, a little bit of him, but then his personality is formed now.
How old is your son?
Let's see. He's 48.
Wow.
Wait, really?
Wait a minute. Is he 48?
You look too young to have a 48-year-old.
He was born in 78, so he's 46. He'll be 46.
Thought you were going to go with like 20. Yeah. Okay. And he's in the business too?
Oh, yeah. He's been in since he graduated from Miami up at Oxford, and he's awesome.
Are there grandchildren yet then?
Not yet.
Okay. We don't want to rush him. We're not rushing him, but then just we have to ask.
And your brother Mark also, Mark, he has kids as well, right?
Yes. Okay. His daughters are both involved in the business, but his grandkids are younger, just like most of mine are a little bit younger. But, you know, Mark and I were like the second generation. Mark, a chef by training. I lean more toward the administrative side of the business and the people side of the business. I'm a little more front of the house. Mark always owned the back of the house. And we were an awesome team, you know, working together. But, you know, as time marches on, you always have to kind of be responsible for the next generation. And Nick has done a great job. He's worked for us probably 20 plus years. So he'll be that third generation to take the helm. But as Dad said earlier, we have such longevity in our company. And so many folks have been around, you know, more than 40 years. We always have a special anniversary for folks where we give them a nice gift and we bring cookies in and we sing a special song. And it's kind of hokey.
Is it a song we know? Or
no,
is it
you
like
don't know. It's something we made up. But it's kind of hokey. But somebody at some point in the journey learned some research that companies that sing and celebrate together are always very successful. Mm-hmm. There's just something about what it does for the culture. So any new hires that are in that, we give them the printout of here's the words to the song. Just pay attention. Get with the program.
Wow. But we need a song at the Enquirer.
There you go.
We have a lot of musical people. I'm not one of them, but we do have a lot of musical people.
Okay, well, we're going to get on that. Okay.
Lesson Did learned. You do anything special for the 70th? Like a family something?
Up.
It's coming up.
Yeah, it's all coming up.
But do you have... be celebrating a kind of public facing, right?
Right.
And letting everybody know. But is there like a special family celebration?
But you see, the Enquirer, has been, they've got their systems. 2 years ago, as I remember, because I used to carry the Enquirer, this one shoulder is a little bit lower. Putting the
because
sack
you
on,
used to deliver the Enquirer?
You got pizza shoulder and Enquirer shoulder.
I used to deliver it just on Sunday because of my other school activities. But if you didn't start out the morning with the Enquirer, you missed. Well, they didn't have TV back in those days.
True. We'll try and remind people that's still an important way to start their Sundays.
And of course, you used to buy an Enquirer, I mean, the Daily Enquirer for 3 cents, and it went to a nickel.
A little bit more than that.
I think it's $5 now.
But Keith and I do our best to make it worth your money.
Yeah, we're trying.
No,
we're
but,
trying.
You know, that's that was like a religion. I didn't get my Enquirer today.
Yeah.
You know? And I came up with an idea many years ago, and I wrote in. I said, when it rains, the papers get wet. You should have some, like a wax paper bag that you can put it in. They got them now today.
What?
By the door, so they don't get wet.
That is
the paper bags.
You were the
that's probably true.
Reason
they didn't
behind
have
that
those.
Too. Yes.
Well, I didn't get credit for it,
You
though.
Didn't get credit for it? Okay, so I was going to give you credit for the hoagie. And yeah, do that. Pizza, and
to be fair,
sleeve, so.
We're doing the writing, so let's go. Who's gonna correct us? No one.
Somebody will pop up from somewhere.
I'm glad you're in Cincinnati because I always thought you were a staff writer and you lived in New York. Or, you know, I really feel honored. I see that Pandolfo all the time. I said, boy, he's all over
he's
the place.
He's amazing, isn't
he's
he?
He must be syndicated.
Oh, he should be.
Well, you know, when I was in New York, I'm sure you know about this, there used to be a Cincinnati night at a restaurant called Edwards in Soho, where they would ship a bunch of La Rosa's pizzas, Skyline chili, graters, and some Montgomery and ribs. And you couldn't even get into that place. It was the first, I think, Wednesday.
It was Edwards Manufacturing Company.
What's that?
Edwards Manufacturing. It was a manufacturing company, Edwards. And these operators, restaurateurs, moved their operation in there, but they kept the name Edwards.
The restaurant.
Yes.
Yeah. Yours is in New York, though.
This is New York.
In New York.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
This is in New York when I was living in New York, and there would be two seatings. Like I said, I think it was the first Tuesday or Wednesday of every month, and it was all Cincinnatians would be lining up to get in there. And it was just such a great thing because I could get my La Rosa's fix while I was up
what
there.
What else? All right, so La Rosa's, Skyline.
They had La Rosa's, Skyline, Graders,
Montgomery Ribs. Okay.
Yes. And it was fantastic. But I did, when I was in New York, write about La Rosa's a lot. And every Cincinnatian in New York would call me or let me know how much they enjoyed that because they just missed it so much.
Well, isn't
Ray
the big pizzeria up there, Ray's?
Ray's is, yes. Yeah. Yes, Ray's famous pizzeria. Yeah. Yes, but.
I don't know if Edwards still does that, but they were doing it for a long time.
Yeah, a long time.
I hope they're still there.
I'll check online after we do this, but.
Yep. We do have a weird question today. It's a little bit of a side. So every once in a while, like in the news, so there has been a big conversation this week about serving Coke or Pepsi.
Uh-oh.
And you don't expect sometimes stories kind of take off. People seem very passionate about that. And since we had you here, we wanted to ask you, like, what goes into the decision-making of, like, how to choose something like that? Because you have Coke products, right? And we saw major chains go to Coke products. Like, how does that work?
Well, we've been with Coke for a long time. In fact, originally, my father was with Pepsi. So I would say maybe in your first 10 years or so, it was Pepsi. But an interesting thing happened. At some point in the game, Pepsi realized that they could control beverage flow if they bought some restaurant chains. So PepsiCo bought Pizza Hut.
Right.
And installed Pepsi in all the Pizza Huts. Well, at the point in time that happened, we were competing directly with Pizza Hut, and we just had a problem with that. Why are we buying Pepsi? And we're competing with them on the street. So we jumped to Coke for that reason. Okay.
Remember what was the name of the guy that sold me the annuity?
Oh, yeah, Mr. Nickert.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he was big with Pizza Hut. That was my vendetta to him.
Oh, you know what? It's not a good Italian story until there's a vendetta.
I knew there would a vendetta would
come. You know
come
what it
up.
Is? Yes. It's in here.
Yeah. He's pointing to his neck.
But originally, that's why we switched. So let's say we switched in the 70s.
Okay.
Now, ever since then, when the contract comes up for renewal, honestly, we have talked to Pepsi a number of times, and we see what their pitch looks like to do business with us. But Coca-Cola has provided us great service over time. We've never had reason to leave them. So we like to remain loyal to our vendors. And then the other thing we look at is there's a certain amount of research as far as how these beverage sales are occurring in the grocery store. And generally, retail data is a pretty good indicator of consumer preference. So anytime we've looked at that, for whatever reason, Coca-Cola has a more dominant share of that product being sold. So, you know, it's one of these things that there are folks that absolutely love Pepsi. There are folks that absolutely love Coke. But I think we've held a pretty good connection to guests over time by staying with Coke.
And I don't feel like you can change because it's like what you expect when you go at a certain point. It's like, well, that's what I'm getting when I go there. And if there's ever a switch, you're like, why did that happen? Frisch's knows firsthand.
Yes. Yeah, that got a little choppy, didn't it?
It did. Yeah. It did.
Yeah. All right. And then Keith wants to know, I know he's not going to ask, so I'll ask for him. He wants to know how he can get RC at restaurants.
Are you an RC fan?
I'm an RC man, yes. I can only get it at Finke's Market over in Northern
RC
Kentucky.
Cola.
But RC
like
Cola, yes.
Their can or bottle or just
I like to get a cold can of RC. That's
cold
just,
can.
Yes.
Okay.
I've heard this a lot. Now this week we've gotten back into it.
Yes.
My wife loves Diet Right Cola.
I have a
task each week making sure I have the house filled with that. Because it's not
You're
always
a very
easy to find.
Good husband.
Yeah. I make two stops sometimes.
All right. I put Coke Zero on the shopping list for Alex. He does all the shopping at Kroger because he covers Kroger for us.
Oh yeah.
And so yes, he does all his research. He'll be at the grocery store for like 3 or 4 hours. Mm-hmm. I'll be like, "Are you ever coming home?"
Yeah. I just like the underdog soda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a family business, you want the family to be involved in it. So many times, I worked for a lot of families over the years. I always worked from the time I was 10 years old. And I always wanted to see how the father ran the business. What possessed the son, usually they want to get away from that authority and that you do this and you do that. I like to be more democratic. And what do you think? Would you like to do this for the rest of your life or not really burn them out? I would never let them do tasks that cut onions, for instance. I want to buy them ready cut. I don't want none of my employees to do a task that's horrible, you know? So I buy them ready. They still buy them that way, Michael?
We're looking at going back to it. There was some issues with consistency for a while, but we're looking at going back.
Well, when you have...
So now you're cutting onions.
We're presently cutting. Okay. We'll be testing them soon because there's a new provider that we're going to look at.
But when you have anything that's sharp that can cut themselves with too, you know, like meat slicers.
Yeah.
When we had a meat slicer in every store to cut the pepperoni, every weekend, the emergency, you know, hospital took somebody up there to get sewed up. And technically, you can't operate a machine like that unless you're, what, 21, Mike?
I think so, yeah.
Power. And their kids are all 16, 17, 18. Yeah. You know they're going to be over there cutting that darn thing. But
we got rid of them.
That was my big challenge, getting them to follow my footsteps.
Oh, well, do you feel like you made a good – obviously, they did.
You made a good decision. You know – they want to come along, fine. If they don't, it's all right. Just help your mother. But I always would give them money to count for me. Mm-hmm. Well, when you do that, it's an old Sicilian superstition. When your kids count money, money will be going through their hands for the rest of their life.
Oh.
Huh.
Never heard of that.
I never learned that one.
Yeah, my grandpa used to have me count money.
Did you know about that?
I did not.
Yeah. Say, well...
I'm going to start having my daughter count the money.
No, because then it goes through. That's a bad thing, right?
Oh, it's a bad thing.
It's a bad thing.
No, is it a good thing or a bad thing? It's like an attraction.
Oh.
Having your kids count money is one of those attractions.
I see. All right. I'm very excited.
It's never been proved out, but we're just going to roll with it.
Okay.
So we have to hang out more Italians to learn more about our own
people. I always want to hang out with Italians.
We should all help. Yes.
But some families, they don't want I don't want my kids to do what I'm doing. Wait a minute. You know, it's been good to you. If there's some reason other than just because you don't want them to do it, maybe they want to do it.
Yep.
And we act as counselors to a lot of the students that we work. We're their mentor. Did you ever go to Trio's restaurant?
Yep. Yes.
Yes.
I mentored that guy.
Really?
Yeah.
I imagine you probably, a lot of the big names in Cincinnati restaurants have worked at La Rosa's at one time or another. So that's interesting.
And I'm flattered that, you know, he went.
He's been there a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Trios, that's a survivor.
He also owns Embers.
And Embers.
Yep, Embers too. Yeah.
We were just discussing this. He was a fly on the wall.
I know, yeah.
I usually go there once a week up to Trios. And I have a caregiver. And she takes me to get my hair done.
Looks great, by the way.
But
you can't
we have
see it.
To say, we don't feel like you need one. You might have one, but it does not seem like you need one.
And when we go in there, I see where the cameras are, and I just wave because I know Greg's looking at them cameras.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of Trio, I have to ask you, like, could you name, like, three of your favorite restaurants besides your very own restaurant?
Well, some of them aren't in business today anymore in Cincinnati over the years.
Okay. We like to talk about restaurants of past.
But today,
this
day and age, Trios, Embers, go there all the time. Over the river at, what's it?
Italian?
Orangeburger. Waltz.
Waltz Hitching Post. I love Waltz.
And a very special occasion, once in a while, Ruby's.
Okay.
That's how we treat it. Not Keith, he gets to eat everywhere, but we treat it as a special occasion place.
You know, for the average family that's not going to spend $100 for dinner, you know, Trios, where else? Well, in West Side, I go to Mari's. Mm-hmm. The Somme, you ever been to the Somme, Mike, on the West Side?
We're big Somme fans.
There you are. Those are the same ones I go to. And when I go there, I see friends mm-hmm. that are coming to our places, and I acknowledge them when they talk to me. Mm-hmm. And a couple times, I'll even pick up their checks, you know?
That is very nice of
you. Yes. But don't say anything.
But not at Ruby's.
I say, don't tell them, and then when I'm gone.
Yeah.
But I like to do that. I know. You know,
it's
I
nice just, to have some where it is and things in East Brooklyn.
I think you have to be good in order to be happy.
It's true.
I saw, before I went into Mari's last night, I saw a person picking up cigarette butts, okay? And when I walked by, I said, hey, cuz, I got something for you. And I gave him a couple bucks.
Aww.
Oh, man, thank you. I really needed it. Go on. Be careful. You know,
because that person cares.
Well, sure.
That person cares.
You know, so many people, well, if you can't be in a position to help anybody, you don't do it. Now, my wife would say, why don't you mind your own damn business? Leave that person. I said, well, he's a human being. God made him. God made no junk. This guy here, he goes to a prayer group every Friday. Made me feel kind of slack because I don't do that.
You go to church every Sunday, though.
I asked him. I said, you mind if I go to your prayer group? I'll shut up and I'll sit in the corner. So I go to his prayer group.
Oh, wow. You just started doing that recently?
Please?
You just started doing that recently?
Yeah. And there's other businessmen are in there. Hey, we have to humble yourself. There's a greater power. If you don't believe it, then okay, go your own way. I respect you for that. But if we all believe in a superior being, well,
prayer is good quiet time. Quiet time is few and far between these days.
Yeah, you know, men naturally don't know how to support one another. But what I found to be enlightening is when men care about each other and they sort of hold each other accountable, because to be a good husband and a good father and a good businessman, accountability is part of it. So out of the sessions, you know, we all open up on things that are important to us. We pray for each other. We hold each other accountable. Sometimes we coach each other because something that you're struggling with, maybe I have some experience or somebody else has experience with, so we share.
Support.
But men have a difficult time doing that on their own. Women don't by any stretch of the imagination.
I talk on the phone all day, every day.
But it's been healthy for that reason.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
All right. Well, we cannot thank you enough for stopping by today. This was just an absolute joy to get to know you better and talk to you. And just, you're such a part of our community. Thank you.
Piacere mio. My pleasure.
My pleasure, too.
You guys are great.
It was great meeting you finally.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that was a great conversation. I missed Burrell, but it was the absolute best decision to bring Keith in to help me co-host today. Keith, how was it?
I think it went well.
I think it went amazing.
I hope it went well.
It went amazing.
I'm not
going to
listen to it.
Well, I don't listen to myself. Although they say if you want to get better, you should listen to yourself.
Okay. Well, if anybody wants to tell me how I did, please feel free to reach out.
Thank you so much for doing that with me. Now, this is the portion of time where we talk about our That's So Cincinnati moment. Mm. But let's face it, there's nothing more so Cincinnati than talking to Buddy LaRosa.
That was pretty Cincinnati.
And all week, when people are like, what did you do this week? Or what's up? Or da-da-da-da. I get to say, I talked to Buddy LaRosa.
Yeah.
That's So Cincinnati. So that's how we're going to end it today.
I like it.
All right. Thank you, Keith.
Thank you.